Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What the fucksters? What's happening? Sorry, I just knocked the mic. I knocked it. And I'm trying to have a good tone about this because I don't want to get to the point where I'm bumming people out where they're like, is Maron still fucking sad? I am. I am sad, but I'm finding little nuggets of okayness here and there. Like, no matter how far this shit goes down the toilet in the world, I can still sit on my porch and pretend like things are okay. But Monkey is definitely winding down. Like today, earlier today, before I recorded this, I got, you know, he's kind of like stashing himself in a weird place. Not a good sign. But I got him out and he got on my chest and he just laid there and I literally cried and told my cat I loved him and that we have a lot of good memories. And we do. That's the fucked up thing, man. By the way, Amber Preston, the comedian who I met in the Midwest, I believe in Minneapolis, used to open for me here and there, will be on the show. Also, J.L. Covan, who does a pretty startlingly funny, if it's even possible, Trump impression. I'm going to talk to him for a few minutes as well. But it's strange, you know. I guess a lot of people have pictures of their children growing up, and I have pictures of my cat, but not really growing up. But I've been through so many different lives. I've been through so many lives, and I got these cats in fucking 2004, right in the summer. So the original crew of the five, the two, LaFond and Monkey, you know, ended up having this amazing life and being out here. But what Monkey has been through with me is insane. I can mark the time with Monkey. I know when I finally brought him back, I got him to the house in Highland Park in Los Angeles. And I remember, like, I left him there and I had to go back to New York and I was married to Mishna at the time and she couldn't find Monkey. And then apparently he just stuck his head out of the chimney vent. He had climbed up in there. But I can mark the times of my life. He's been with me for 16 years. And I have a hard time marking the times of my life with people I've been with or relationships I've had or phases and, you know, different levels of depression, breakup, insanity. And Monkey was there. He was there. I don't want to do a premature obituary. I'm just trying to steel myself again. I'm trying to steel myself. I connected with him. He felt the love. It's a fucking cat, I know, but it's Monkey. He's my favorite one. And just realizing that the two things that I've really let myself love in a very deep way, maybe ever, you know, I'm going to lose, you know, fairly close to each other. Maybe some miracle will happen and Monkey will persist and keep living, but I don't know. He's acting weird. He's fucking old as fuck. He's drinking a lot of water. He's still eating. He's still purring. He's still coming around. He's still taking his medicine, going to the bathroom. He's not throwing up. No diarrhea. No fucking, I don't know. I just know he's drinking a lot of water. And he's looking a little loopy. looking a little skinny. But that's the thing, man. It's like, you know, he doesn't know it, but I know it. I can look at my life with that cat. He's been through all of it. I just remember when I was so sad, and I had to go back to New York to take the job, to end the divorce, to get the money, to stop the hemorrhaging. And I was devastated, man. That was devastating. And this is devastating, what I'm in now. I guess somehow maybe it prepared me, you know, me taking all these risks by not staying with people or making the compromises necessary or being a fucking asshole or just having a tragic thing happen. I guess I'm somewhat have been through some shit, it seems, in this life. Now, I'm that guy. But I just remember I didn't know what to do. I had to go back to New York. And I was lonely. And I actually loaded Monkey up and brought him back to New York with me. I left LaFonda here with some other cats, Fat Moxie and Boomer. I took Monkey back, and me and Monkey did like a year in New York together and came back. Like, that was the relationship I had with this fucking cat. And I guess he's hanging on. I'm hanging on. It's like, it really is something, this grief business. That sort of, the fear of forgetting is powerful. Like, I've taken it upon myself. I have Lynn's jacket and hat and boots sort of near the door. And I finished a Joan Didion book, by the way. People recommend books. And again, people have been great. Still being great. A lot of love goes out to Tom Sharpling, Sam Lipsight, Jerry Stahl, Brendan McDonald. People have been showing up for me. Steve Danziger, Michaela Watkins. I'm giving shout outs to the people that are stopping me from falling into a pit of fucking darkness. Self-pity, maybe. I've avoided the self-pity. A woman in Austin who's a psychotherapist, Stephanie, she said that Joan Didion practiced, there's a difference between, and I don't know that I read this in the book, but there's a difference between self-pity and self-sorrow. The book is great. The Year of Magical Thinking. I'm happy I read it. I don't know if I read it too soon or not. But I guess the point is to keep her in my heart, to keep her in my mind. I have her jacket there, and I walk in, and sometimes I'll just touch it, and then I'll get a flash, and then I'll look at the hat, and I'll get a flash of her being in those things, and her face and her energy in that moment. Oh, fuck this, man. Fuck this. Wow. Someday I'll stop crying in front of my neighbors. I went over to Dan's house. Had a socially distanced little cookout there. Dan from Gimme Gimme Records. His wife, Jen, the acupuncturist, the needle lady. Just sitting around out back, listening to records, eating nice food. But here's the fucking thing. Look, folks, I still need, you know, a little bit of a reality check sometimes. I got there and I brought some pickled onions that I made, and, you know, it was still light out, and everyone showed up and came, and we ate and we talked for like a couple of hours. It got dark out, and I get like 2.5 hours in. Got to go to the bathroom. And, you know, it's emotional conversations, some light conversations, but it's just nice to hang out with people. They're good people. Everyone's good folks. And I go into the house, go to the bathroom, and I look in the mirror. I got my fucking sunglasses on. I mean, I was sitting there in the dark with four people that I know pretty well outdoors wearing my fucking sunglasses. Now, I get it. I guess, you know, they were thinking like, I guess he's really sad, or this is his thing now, and this is how he grieves. But what in a, like if I were sitting with me, I'd be like, what's this affected fuck doing? I get he's sad, but I mean, you're among friends, take your glasses off. No one said nothing. And I walked out, I'm like, what do you think I am, some sort of asshole? No one's going to tell me I'm wearing sunglasses for the last 3 hours? I didn't know. But I mean, it's not really on them, but it's interesting how polite people are. I guess that's politeness. I mean, what were they afraid of? I guess, like, would I have said something? Hey, Marin, is it too sunny out here for you? It's fucking nighttime. I mean, what? Go fuck yourself, man. I'm sad. I'm fucking sad. I guess that's what they were afraid of. Do you really need to wear sunglasses? It's dark now. Look, man, my eyes have been crying for a month, man. I want to show them. No, I'm just an idiot. I'm a dumb old man. Didn't know I had sunglasses on. Grief is twisting me up. Twisting me up, making me look like a pompous celebrity out back at night wearing sunglasses. So, look, it'll be 5 years, actually, tomorrow, June 19th, I spoke to then-President Barack Obama. Incredible conversation, which is always available at WTFpod.com. We're on Stitcher Premium, wherever you listen. And now it's 5 years later, and we're definitely not having Donald Trump on the show. That hasn't happened, though there is a secret agreement, not so secret, I'm telling you, between Brendan and I, that if, because we don't really do politicians, but we do presidents, we would have to indulge him if he were to play by the same rules that Barack Obama did, President Barack Obama, but he will not. So I saw this guy, maybe you've seen him on Twitter, JL Covan. And he doesn't look like Trump in any way. He doesn't really put on any makeup other than a hat occasionally. But he does a fucking great Trump. And sometimes he'll riff out as Trump. And it kind of kills me. Like, for instance, here's a little bit of him doing Trump.
Happy Earth Day. It's a beautiful day. We love Earth. It's, you know, it's a great planet. And we're taking unbelievable care of it, because as you know, I want the cleanest air and the strongest, cleanest water. So it's a very important day, and we're doing great things for the environment, a lot more than anybody else has done. So believe me, we're doing a lot more than you ever did. I can tell you that. I can tell you that much. But am I a fan of Mother Nature? No. Mother Nature, as you know, is a very nasty woman. Okay. Mother Business, we like. We like Mother Business. She's strong. She wears the stiletto heels. We love the stilettos. Very powerful, very sleek, very sexy Mother Business. But Mother Nature is like kind of dumpy, okay? And she's very nasty. She's always saying very, very lib, anti-Trump things, okay? So no, we don't like Mother Nature.
That was JL Covan doing our current fucking nightmare of a president. And so I wanted to talk to him a bit because he's been doing comedy a while. You can listen to his podcast, which is called Making Podcasts Great Again. He's got a new album out with his Trump material. It's called Fireside Craps, The Deuce. And it's available now on iTunes and Amazon. I just wanted to get a sense of who he is. So this is me and talking to JL Covan.
Covan.
What kind of name is that?
French. My father was Haitian, so my mother was Irish. That's why I look the way I do. But yeah.
So, have you been doing this a lot of places?
The impression I've been doing, like in 2016, I had a couple sort of private gigs, and I was closing my sets with it, like at stand-up clubs.
Yeah.
But then just basically was relegated to sort of YouTube. It never took off the way I kind of thought it should have. Everybody else seemed to have a Trump that was taking off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I work also as an attorney, and I was home, working from home, bored. And I've been doing a couple of these just Trump videos on my phone because I know the voice is good. I know I have it down. And I figured, let's see how these go. And a couple got, you know, 10,000 views on Twitter, which is nice, but it's not like it doesn't make a mark or anything. And then I had one a month and a half ago get 7 million views, and that sort of totally shifted sort of my online presence. And, you know, thinking my career was basically over, I'm now like, hey, I think I might have just gotten a career again.
Yeah, you think? So you're an attorney?
Yeah, I started doing stand-up in law school in 2003, and then worked for the DA's office, worked for a firm, got laid off in 2009 during the financial crisis, and sort of featured full time for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And then all my money disappeared. And then I had to go back to doing part-time legal work because I hadn't given up on the idea of like, I'm going to break through at some point. I don't know if you remember, I'd done like the last internet viral thing I had. I did an impression of Louis C.K. back in 2015.
Was that you all dressed as Louis?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. It was funny.
Right. Yeah. So that was me. And like, I've had these up and down years and I was like a guest on Corolla frequently. And then I had my stuff played on ESPN radio, but it was never enough to be like, okay, now I can get back into trying full time. And last year I basically took a full-time job at a law firm, moved out of the city. I'm from New York City, but I now live in Jersey, moved out of the city for the first time, you know, at 40.
Yeah.
And was kind of like, I'll keep doing comedy, but I don't know if it can be my priority anymore.
So, okay. So wait, so you were closing with the Trump in 2016 and then you did a bunch of it on YouTube. And then what, yeah. The third one you did recently got 7 million?
It's at like 6.8 million on Twitter and like 2.5 million on YouTube.
And now what does that mean? Who reaches out to you? What happens?
Well, there's been, a lot of people reach out with writing suggestions. They send me emails saying, why don't you try this in a skit?
Right. Sure.
But, some people, celebrities have reached out to me. Let me put it this way. The only people who haven't reached out to me are agents and managers. So once again, my career still seems like locked in place, but it's been a lot. I mean, everybody but people who can maybe give me a career have reached out and told me how great I am. Like I did Howard Stern.
You did.
I think I'm doing it again next week. It's been like having 7 years of my career jammed into 1 month.
But it's still, even that though, you know, doing radio bits doesn't give you money.
Exactly. And it's also weird because it's like now everybody wants to hear the Trump. And I'm like, I have been doing stand-up comedy for over 16 years and I'm very good in my opinion. So it's like, I'm in this place now where I want to capitalize and make money and get my name out there, but also not have it become you're that guy. And that's all. And then wow. You say anything else and they're like, well, nobody wants to hear that.
That's tricky, man. So, so your act is not impression based?
No, it when I started out, it was, 04, 05, 06, that's really what a lot of what I did. And then, you live a little and you want to talk about other things and your voice develops as a stand-up comic. So then like for 6 or 7 years, I would close with an Obama bit, but that was the only impression in my set. I had a lot of impressions on YouTube, but yeah. I kind of wanted to keep them separate. And then I've been closing with a Trump for the last 3 years, but like that's the only impression in the set.
What other impressions did you used to do?
Of course, the hacky ones early on, Arnold Schwarzenegger, De Niro. I had a good Owen Wilson.
Uh-huh.
I then started developing, like I had the Louis C.K., George Lopez. Some friends really like my Greg Giraldo impression,
which
as a lawyer comedian, is especially meaningful. And now I have a Joel Osteen impression video.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a decent number of hits. And I don't know if you know who this is, John Bernthal, the guy who played like the Punisher.
Yeah, I've interviewed him.
Oh, great. I have a really good one of him that I'm probably going to mix with Trump in the next week or two. So there's like a whole range.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, the Trump has sort of dominated for monetary and cultural reasons. So
right.
It's become almost like a role. Instead of being one of many impressions I do, it's almost become like my main role over the last couple of years.
Well, I think it's an important role. The weird thing is that, Brendan mentioned to me was that it's so close and so possible that, it's barely a farce,
Right. No, I end up trying to just go, because I have the way I think I've gotten it good also, the voice was good, but I do a weekly show as Trump. And that's sort of like loose improv every week as Trump. And that sort of has made me really good at just sort of, I'm more anticipating where he's going to be 6 months from now versus like, this could never happen. It's more like I did a thing on my show where he was making fun of Shinzo Abe, like, and doing a bad Asian stereotype accent.
Right.
Two friends of mine were like, dude, that was like pushing it. And I go, well, that's what he would do.
Right.
And then like 6 months later, it comes out that in private, he's been making fun of like Asian leaders' accents. And I go, I can't be held accountable for being offensive if I'm merely predicting the behavior of this offensive person.
Right.
So it's more about keeping ahead of him than like trying to outdo him.
Right. So what's the podcast you're doing or just a YouTube show?
Oh no, it's Making Podcasts Great Again is the weekly podcast. So that's like, just a, you know, it's really, it's very fun, and we've developed kind of a nice following for it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like people will hear things and contact me like 6 months later, like, can you believe what Trump said? Didn't you say that last year on the show?
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's fun and scary.
So what does it take to get into Trump? Do you just drop into it?
Yeah. It's, I mean, at this point, it's the mindset is very easy. And then it's just, you kind of lower the voice and you kind of, you know, then, and there's different Trumps. There's like, I'm meeting with Mark Maron right now. And it's like, we're having like a good discussion. I'm doing my, like my 60 Minutes voice.
Yeah.
We're doing good things.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're a reporter, especially like a black woman reporter, it's like, excuse me, you're nasty. Okay, you write that. You're a nasty woman. That's why you got fired. No, not you. You. And then the rally Trump is like the biggest, which is just the, what do we think about Joe Biden? Isn't Sleepy Joe, isn't he like the worst? You, right there, my African-American, you know what I'm talking about. He's like the sleepiest guy. He's so sleepy. He's like falling asleep. You see him? He's like not able to stay awake. That's what they say when you're sleepy. They say you can't stay awake. It's like, I know all the words for sleeping. It's like a beautiful thing. Yeah, so it's nice to see you laugh. But it's, yeah, it's a whole range. And at this point, I credit sort of CNN. I think it was bad for democracy. But I credit them with never like going to commercial for 3 years while he's on TV, because it was just this almost by osmosis at that point that the impression just kept getting better and more nuanced.
And now, because, you know, like he's actually improvising much more now.
Know, great jazz artist.
Yeah. Something. I mean, with these 2 hour long briefings. You know, I have not watched one in its entirety, and I know that they usually cut away from them, but they've got to be just, have you listened to any of the 2 hour briefings in their entirety?
I have, and I feel a little guilty about it because part of me says, hey, it's kind of like research. I want to know if there's something he said.
Yeah.
Something kooky. But at the same time, I don't even care what he says because I just have to one up it anyway.
Right.
And they're really bad. They're like, I've turned some of them off because I'm just like, these are ego strokes for him. He can't do his rallies. So he gets to go out there and yell at, you know, women and liberals.
But you do see how his brain works.
Oh yeah. Oh no. It's because what I've said to people, whenever somebody says to me, like, Trump is very smart. He's a very smart guy, or he has good instincts.
Yeah.
I go, my dog has good instincts too. If there's a steak on the table, she'll probably figure out how to nudge a chair over to the table, jump on the chair and get the steak.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean she can go to college and read books. It's just, she is very focused on using her particular skills. And his instinct is a combination of ego stroke and self-preservation. So all you have to do, I've said, the impression, because I do a lot of meandering as him, and that's something that people really like, the going off topic and finding your way back. It's a choose your own adventure book when you're doing a Trump impression, but the choice is always what makes Trump feel happy. So if he says a word, if he goes, you know, we're having a, it's called teleconference. Okay. A lot of people are doing this. Don't you like that word? Teleconference. Like he's impressed with the fact that he said the word. So now let's go off on a little side adventure on how great that word is because I said it.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and go, but it's a great thing. And we're doing great, great work for the people. You next.
Yeah. He, that thing, the Nabisco riff was, that's the one that killed me.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the ventilator, the Nabisco.
Yeah, making
Nabisco. They're making our ventilators now. So we're going to have very strong Nabisco. They're one of our great companies, a great American.
Is that the one that got all the hits?
No. That did well too. But the big one was actually the one I thought was like not as good.
Yeah.
Like, you never know what's going to hit. It was about him wanting to reopen the country on Easter. And that was way too soon. So the joke that it became, the tangent was, oh, Easter, like God only brought back his son on Easter Sunday. And that, to be honest, is kind of biased because he's only bringing back his own son. Who wouldn't want to bring back their own son?
Yeah.
I'm going to bring back the whole economy. We're going to have a pay-per-view event where it's God versus Trump and who brings back more people on Easter Sunday. It's going to be a beautiful thing.
So now, what kind of law practice are you involved with? Do they know that you do the Trump
They do. It's I'm a staff attorney. I'd rather not say where, yeah. But it's basically you're paid pretty well to do sort of the stuff that the legal profession requires lawyers to do, uh-huh. But not much beyond that. Like I often say, I sometimes say you're like the fluffers of a law firm.
Uh-huh.
You like get stuff ready at the lowest level, but you're not one of the stars and you're not doing the real meat and potatoes work.
Uh-huh.
And they do know, I was upfront because I didn't want to have a thing where it's like they discover 6 months later and go, oh, you need to leave. So I figured rather tell them upfront. And then when the Trump video blew up, we were all working remotely. And like, I had a secretary email me. I had a coworker email me. They're like, my aunt just sent me your video. And I'm like, oh, that's how I knew it's gotten big. When people who didn't even know me are getting me from their distant relatives.
Well, as a lawyer, it's kind of interesting that the methodology of this particular president is that if you sue somebody, that means it'll get, you've got time to outpace it.
Exactly. Yeah. Trump uses lawsuits, not even in pursuit of money or certainly not in pursuit of justice, but as like a delay tactic.
Yeah.
Until he can like get flown to a non-extradition country.
Yeah. Well, see, I have no idea what's going to happen after. But like, what is the that's the other odd thing is it seems like, sadly, given that your career is starting to take a turn and you got this record out and you've got the podcast that, you have something invested in Trump. It's sort of like, Von Meter, after JFK was killed, it was kind of over and a sad story for that guy. but you could, it seems that even if he doesn't win, God willing, you'll still be able to find a way to parody him.
Yeah. And I think, I joked with somebody before about Von Meter. I said, yeah, I think I had all my Von Meter tragedy and sad sack career.
Yeah, before.
Before yeah. This, instead of at least that's the right direction to do it in.
Yeah.
So for me, I've been doing stand-up almost 17 years. So I know at least my chops are there.
Yeah.
If I get the opportunity to showcase more, yeah. I know that I will thrive. And with Trump, I'm still conflicted if I'm going to continue doing it. And people will think I'm full of shit, but I am conflicted about continuing it if he wins. I'm much more comfortable continuing it, even to a smaller audience, if he loses. To mock him, I can do like a, here's what Trump's political commentary is on Biden
right.
Now that he's out of office.
Right.
But if he gets reelected, it really does, no hyperbole, it says something fundamental about this country's essence, how it picks its leaders. And it's not, I don't think it's funny anymore. I think a mistake can be corrected, but doubling down on it says, structurally and spiritually, this country has hit a tipping point.
I think, sadly, I feel the same way, and I'm not even doing an impression. Yeah. the bigger concerns are like, how do we live here if that is the world we're going to be living in?
Yeah. And the benefits when you've had a career that's been 15, 16 years of up and down and disappointments and little successes, I'm at least emotionally very well equipped to have my career fall off another cliff and be like, oh, nobody wants to book me anymore. Oh, so it's just like 2015 and 2017, I guess.
But you're also, you're employed, which is good.
Yeah, no. And of course, that's something also that fell into my lap less than a year ago.
Yeah.
Like I was doing part-time work for like 6.5 years. So I didn't always have this,
right.
But I developed the, I guess, coping mechanisms or strategies to be like, all right, it's just, yeah. You're get used to the disappointment.
And you have kids?
No kids.
Uh-huh. Married?
Longtime girlfriend.
Yeah.
And a dog.
And you're out there and you got a place in Jersey.
Yes. So it's okay. It's not the way, I certainly didn't think taking 3 steps back from my comedy career was exactly what was needed for me to become a success.
Hey, but you and me both, buddy. I mean, you know. But it's really funny and you do a great job. Thanks for talking to us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
So that was J.L. Covan, his podcast, Making Podcasts Great Again, and his album Fireside Craps, The Deuce, is available. And now let's talk to Amber Preston. Amber's a nice Midwestern lady. I always thought she was very funny. She opened for me. I met her in Minneapolis years ago. I'm sure we'll discuss that. Her new stand-up album is called Sparkly Pants. You can get it wherever you get music and comedy albums. And I like her. And we did this in person, in real life. She got a test to come over to my house. Should I get tested, even though I don't feel any symptoms? Is that something we need to do once a week if we're going to talk to anybody? Maybe it is. I don't know. All right, so I'm now going to introduce you to my friend Amber Preston, and we're going to chat right now. What is this album called?
Sparkly Parts.
Sparkly Parts. First album?
First album.
What are we, 10 years in now? 12, 15?
12-ish?
12 years in?
Yeah. Oh, well, I recorded it years ago and then just sat on it.
I don't know if that's a great selling point.
Yeah, no, don't say that. Imagine how good I am now. but it was like I wasn't doing that material anymore. And like poor Dan, I was the one that
Dan
sat.
Dan Schwissel?
Yeah, I sat on it and he was like, come on.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I like this book you sent me.
They're just fun, and some of them you're like, oh,
where'd you get it?
We had a copy of that. My dad's a big reader. He's a weirdo, and we had a copy when I was little, and I felt very grown up reading it.
He's a weirdo because he's a reader.
Well, no, he's just like to me, like that. He, as stoic and Scandinavian and closed off as he is, like this seems like
this was the guy, huh? Pete Hein. What do you know about him? Oh, Crooks. A Crook is a short aphoristic poem. This is Crooks 1. Accompanied by an appropriate drawing, revealing in a minimum of words and with a minimum of lines some basic truth about the human condition. Crooks were created originally during the Nazi occupation of Denmark. They began life as a sort of underground language just out of reach of the understanding of the Germans. They have since become one of the most widely read forms of composition in the Scandinavian and English languages.
Yeah, and they're just, some are longer, but, you know, they're just little ditties that you're like, ooh, that's something. That's deep. So I had a copy, and then now I've since collected. There, I think, are six of them.
And did he invent it, Crooks?
I don't know.
It was a sort of a trend at the time. Now yeah. I'm speaking to you as if you're an academic. Are you
I'm a historian of Piet Hein. No, it is a little bit. You can get down the rabbit hole because he would kind of go head to head with this other Danish physicist.
Oh, really?
And
well, I'm very excited about it because it seems to be appropriate for the time we're living in.
I mean,
a secret language of truth is all we really need at this
short
point.
Short quips that you can take in moments of panic. Yeah,
we can. I'll just start tweeting Crooks.
I've been Instagramming them content. That's the content I've been creating.
Wait, so is your dad is he really Scandinavian?
Well, Norwegian and German, but you know, North Dakota. I feel like we're very German, but it is like that Scandinavian. I feel like. Closed off. Don't let.
But do you have relatives with accents, or no. Are you talking generations?
Generations here. My mom's side of the family has some German Russian. Like they have accents. They're in the middle of North Dakota, like related to Lawrence Welk.
Really?
Yeah, that's what my grandma says. But I don't.
That's the one. That's Welk is the one. Welk Jews. It's always like Barbara Streisand. They lived across the street from it. There's some connection.
Well, small town North Dakota, chances are.
Welk was there.
Yeah, we were.
Some playing. Welks. What's
some
that
Welks.
One? Is that his real last name?
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, my dad would. I've been to the farm. Oh, God. It's really
what?
Great. There's a Lawrence Welk farm.
There's a Lawrence Welk farm?
Yeah.
But wait, you were brought up in South Dakota?
North Dakota, how dare you?
Sorry. South Dakota is problematic right now. Oh, North Dakota, what are the big differences?
We're quiet about our problematic issue. Like, we'll be judging and don't want
more Scandinavian?
Yeah.
And more
and Germans?
Lutherans?
Catholic. Oh, yeah, I'm Catholic, super Catholic. My family is very, very Catholic.
But
there's a lot of Lutherans.
So North Dakota is your people?
Yes.
And they came down like in the 1800s when they made land available to be farmed by people who knew how to farm, horrible land.
Right.
Deal?
I think so. I think they were like, we can't do any better.
Right.
So
we don't know what to do with this, but you people who live in Scandinavia seems to have figured it out.
You seem to not want anything better. So.
Well, no, they knew how to farm that land, I think was the idea. And the deal was they would be given a property if they could make it useful.
Do something with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom said they were Germans that were fled to Russia and then came from Russia. So.
Right. I mean, I read there's a book called The Great Plains.
The Great Plains. I'll have to read it.
By Ian Fraser, which is a sort of like condensed history of the region.
Yeah.
And it goes into all that, why the Scandinavians came and the Russians came and the Germans, because it was like a free for all.
Right.
It's like, we don't have any luck with this. And I think they brought.
We tried.
Right. I think they brought winter wheat with them.
Mm.
That was like, and they figured it out. But North Dakota, I have no sense of it.
Yeah. And they want it that way. They don't want you to know.
But was it bleak? What town?
I grew up in Fargo, which is right on the border of Minnesota, and it's a thriving, right, I dare say, metropolis.
I've never been to Fargo.
You haven't?
No.
I swear that, didn't you with?
Oh, with Eugene.
Yeah, I swear that you guys
did. Maybe you're right. Maybe
you don't remember. We blocked. They were like
Eugene and Andy. It was an upstairs joint. It was a small joint.
That was the first time I'd seen you, when you did it in Minneapolis at the Turf Club.
Didn't I have you on?
No, then. I didn't know you then.
I go back to the Turf Club and you opened for me? Mm-mm. Where did you open for me first?
At the Triple Rock.
Oh, that's another rock bar though, right?
Right. You had seen me in Aspen and then asked me in Aspen.
At Aspen at the non-HBO comedy.
Right.
The rooftop.
The rooftop, yeah.
Or the red, what is it? Was it rooftop?
Rooftop, yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a lot of pressure from here as the least successful guest you've ever had. I really
have
to.
That is not true. Oh. I can name.
Well, don't. But thank you. But I just felt like I can't even have that. I thought that was going to be.
No, I don't think it's true. I think that you're just at a level where, you know, you're working, you're solid, you've got the shit, put out a record years ago. That you sat on, that's foresight.
Right.
I'm going to hold off on this.
I'm going to wait till people have nothing to do.
But wait, I need to, like, we need to do some basic stuff here about, like, because I don't know that I, where's Mary Mack from?
She's northern Wisconsin, but we met in Minneapolis.
Right, yeah. But you're not Dakota.
No,
I don't know if I've talked to anyone from Dakota.
No.
Either Dakota.
Yeah, I can't. There's not like a dearth of interesting, famous. A lot of interesting people.
But you grew up in Fargo?
Grew up in Fargo.
But that's like how big a city is that? A million people?
No, 100,000.
Oh, that's not. Right.
Well, maybe a little more. Like, maybe 100,000.
And you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother who lives in Montana with adorable children and like lives off the land and would live
really?
Off the grid if
like
he could.
Ranch kind of thing?
Like, yeah, he like does mason work, but like has like, you know, acres of land and.
Oh, it's so like, nice up there. What are we doing here?
Yeah,
but I don't know what's the white supremacist contingent.
Well, there's that's you know, a thing to consider. And then my sister is younger than me. She lives in Chicago, but she just moved there.
Like a real city. She just moved there, and now she can't leave.
Yeah. And she's not working. Like, she just moved there. She, you know, is like just bartending. So she barely, like, I don't even know if she's getting unemployment because she like just.
Oh,
got there,
no.
Got a big dog, and
an
living
apartment?
Life in an apartment. But she's got great roommates, and they're doing all right. But it's like, yes, I'm leaving Fargo. I'm doing it.
Yeah. Now you can't leave your house.
Right. Yeah.
But like, so what do you do in Fargo? Your dad was.
My dad's he's a retired electrician, and then my mom had a few odd jobs when I was little, and then worked in the school system as like a paraprofessional, and then. Worked at the high school.
Just regular folks.
Regular, hardworking. My dad's a Vietnam vet.
Really?
Yeah.
Does he talk about it?
No, he doesn't talk about it. Sometimes. I remember asking him about it when I was little, as you're learning about it. No grasp of anything. And we also had like a silk like kimono that he'd brought back.
that was the artifact?
That was the thing. And then we found a box of slides that like at a family gathering.
Yeah.
My aunt like pulled up and showed from Vietnam. Yeah. And my dad was like, I don't know what's going to be in here. Like there were pictures of like lady tour guides taking him and some guys on a tour in Australia. And like, so he got to see some interesting things.
But no like in the shit, me and the grunts guys.
No.
The squad I was with.
Some of that kind of jazz. But then maybe like 8 years ago, I wrote him a letter.
Yeah.
Because heaven forbid I ask him face to face. He's going to hate this. He hates like sharing. I'm going to not
anything?
Tell him. Yeah. He doesn't come to my shows because he comes. He's coming.
I feel
come
like down. He came to one. That
he
you...
does come. He doesn't like it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been to all the shows and he will proudly say, well, I've been to all of them. I've been to the worst ones even. I'm like, well, okay.
Don't you do a joke about it?
I'm sure I do. But
yeah.
So I wrote him a letter asking him about Vietnam.
Recently?
About 6 years ago. Oh. And then he one day when I was home on our way out the door, driving back to Minneapolis, he like handed me a notebook and I opened it and he like slammed it shut and was like, don't read this now. It's an answer to your letter. And it was like 12 handwritten pages of like his experience, like getting there. He was supposed to be a shit burner, was his job.
Which
like
means what?
Burning the shit.
Oh, really?
Like getting rid of.
That's a job?
That's a job.
Yeah.
And then the guy who did that.
Yeah.
Or that some, it was, I forget, I have to go back and reread it. It was some, like that was going to be his job, but then the guy who did that wanted to keep that job because he was going to be out in a few months. So then my dad was working on helicopters. So he didn't, I don't think he really saw too much action because he was like a tiny
But he
man
was stationed in Vietnam?
Yeah, he was in Vietnam for a year. He left the day before Thanksgiving and came back the day after.
And that was it?
And that was it, which my grandmother tells us every Thanksgiving. And then he came back and he the only thing I remember him saying when we were little is that it was hard to come back because nobody wanted him there and then nobody cared when he got back. So if you, I think, I would love to know. I think there are some years after that that are party time. Interesting.
Oh, yeah? Yeah? I think I talked to somebody else about this once, about the parent who was in Vietnam and then there was some shit that went down in the years after, but eventually they level off.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, what, you go when you're 18.
So he's back when he's no, 20, 19, 20.
You see this crazy stuff where you're going to go to school? You're going to get a part-time job? You're going to come back and live with your parents?
Right.
And like, what do you...
Got to blow off some steam, figure out what you've been through. But it sounds like he didn't get too fucked up.
No. Well, if he did, he came back from it.
And he came back and met your mom and that was that?
Yeah, I guess so. They were together like 8 years before they got...
Wow. You know,
they were like dirty hippies living in sin, as my grandma says, and followed the Grateful Dead. And
they did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's super deadhead. My first concert was Bob Dylan, like...
When you were a little kid?
Yeah, sixth grade.
What tour was that?
I
wonder what year.
Oh, I
was
have
that?
The t-shirt. 1990. Mm. G.E. Smith was touring with him because I opened the hotel door for G.E. Smith. We were pre-partying.
Yeah.
And
pre-partying.
Well,
at
they were in the bar and I was in the arcade. Yeah. And I saw him come down the stairs and I was like, oh my God, that's the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been around. So that was G.E. Smith that was in the band.
Yeah.
Do you remember the concert being good?
Yeah. Yeah, because I thought it was cool because I knew some like. I was like, nope, play like the Pillbox Hat song. You know, like I knew like some, I thought it was, I knew some B-sides.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah. So they were, but were they like real hippies? Like they were smoking the weed?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't think
really?
They, my mom, I think stopped a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could say the same about my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely, like I've seen pictures from there.
Oh, wow. And then did they like travel and tour with the,
I don't think
follow
they,
the dead around?
Not as much as that, but they definitely, like any of their former houses, there was always many, many people, it seemed like.
Living there.
Like in any gathering picture, it was like, not a lot of clothing, a lot of just like people. And
really?
What are those funky cigarettes,
you
mom?
You come from dirty hippies? A little bit?
A little bit.
But no, everybody's leveled off?
Everybody, they're good. They're grandparents now.
Oh, wow.
My mom just retired.
And you go back to Fargo?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But I didn't meet you there.
No. Aspen and then Minneapolis. And then you asked me to open for you in Minneapolis. At the
I
Turf
met
Club.
You in Aspen.
Yeah.
That I remember that was really bad altitude sickness for me that time.
Yes. Yeah, they had oxygen.
But it's just like, I usually don't get it that bad. It was just really fucked me up that time for some reason. Did you get it? Did we go up on a gondola?
We did go up on a gondola.
Who else was in that gondola? Do you remember?
I do. Well,
was it Ryan Singer? No.
Maybe. He was there. Aparna.
Uh-huh.
Tim Harmston. Who was else at that festival? Oh, the God's Pottery guys. Wilson, and I can't remember the other guys.
I don't remember those guys.
Yeah.
I don't remember them. Where are they from? Are they here?
No, they don't do it anymore. They like... We're a funny, like, Christian camp counselor songs.
It was a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, I think, advanced fairly far on Last Comic Standing.
Yeah.
Like that.
Uh-huh.
They had, like, a crazy 2-year run, and I don't think that they'd planned.
That was, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that was, like, the this is the bit that we are committed to forever. But
yeah.
I can't speak for them.
Yeah. So I met you in Aspen.
Mm-hmm.
Talked.
Yeah.
And then.
I hosted, because, I hosted the show, I think, before yours at the big theater. And then you're like, hey, what are you doing next month? Or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I don't know. Actually, I do. I was going to a festival in Asheville, and I came
North
back
Carolina.
Early. Yeah, and I was like, again, I felt so cool because I was like, oh, I got to Gonna leave this festival early. I gotta go back and open for Marin at a rock club. No big deal.
I remember that rock club gig. We were standing on the floor.
Yeah. Slightly raised above.
Yeah. I'm starting to get like these weird kind of, it's sort of like PTSD from certain gigs. Like just sort of like, I did that. Like I,
you don't have a font, or you just.
Like I did Fargo, like it's out of my brain because right. It was difficult. Yeah. You know, like I really thought that tour with Eugene and Andy, like we were just gonna, like, you know, Eugene was gonna pull all these people in, and you know, and it was gonna be great. Yeah. It was this big idea me and Andy had, and it was just okay.
Yeah,
it was weird, and it just, I don't know.
What
man.
Was it called? It was like the anxiety or the
Stand-up-ity.
Stand-up-ity, okay.
That was Andy's thing.
Yeah.
Then me and Andy ended up getting a fight over bullshit and whatever.
Did you guys drive to
Atlanta? Yeah, we drove the whole thing, hours and hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to say, I used to do a joke about it, like driving with Andy Kindler, it's like driving with the history of the Jewish people. But, where did you start, in Fargo?
No, Minneapolis.
You moved to Minneapolis?
I moved to Minneapolis for college.
Oh, you did?
Left Fargo when I was 18.
What college?
University of Minnesota, Twin Cities.
Mm.
And got a degree in theater and then did absolutely nothing with it.
Is that true? You're a stand-up comic. Like, what'd you do? Like, what kind of theater? Do you got a, like, undergraduate degree? Full 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
Did the acting?
I did.
Directing?
Acting. Just a little a Bachelor of Arts in theater. And then, like, bartended. And then
all acting, though?
Yeah. I mean, you had to, like, take other... You know, you had to learn some lights and, you know, set and stuff. Respect to all the elements.
Yeah. But I mean, but did you like the acting?
I did. And I still do. And then I just didn't do anything. I don't know. You start bartending and you're like, oh, I'm making fat cash and partying and, ooh, smooching boys. And then I got a real job in finance. And
you did?
I did. I worked in corporate America. I worked for Piper Jaffray. And then the little group I worked with spun out, so I worked for this little venture capital company and worked in,
For how long?
Maybe 8 years.
Yeah?
Because I started doing stand-up when I worked that job.
Oh, you're
I was
like,
almost 30.
So you're like stuck in this fucking hell job. You kind of fell into it, huh? You kind of just like you took theater and then you got a bartender job and then you're like, I guess you just, this isn't what life is.
I think I was more like this is what life is?
What, bartending?
No, the corporate job.
I know, but you did it.
Yeah.
I mean, you did, you know, you like, you, it doesn't sound like even, there was a break in between, you didn't even try the other thing.
No, I didn't. And it was, I think.
Did it eat you up or you just sort of like, eh? Or you're just too fucking out of it?
I think a little of both. Like some days you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Right.
And then other days you're like, well, you're working hard and you're paying your bills.
Ugh, that's
and that. That's all that matters.
Right. That's that that kind of Scandinavian.
Yeah, don't be so showy. Uh-huh. You're making decent money. You're starting to save. You got that 401k. What more could you possibly want?
But what were you doing like in finance?
I was an administrative assistant, then executive assistant, making travel plans and putting together presentations. And sitting in a cubicle.
What did you learn?
PowerPoint, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. How to deal with people. I liked them all. Yeah. I liked they were great people, but like politically, we'll say I didn't agree. With a lot of
that shouldn't be in the workplace anyways.
Well,
trickled over.
I don't know.
Be diplomatic.
How to treat an assistant maybe someday? Because they did treat me well, but sometimes come on.
I can't believe you did that. I mean, I can believe it, but like it's a nightmare.
Yeah, and it is like I as an adult have since realized. Do you know about the guess and the ask culture?
No,
you're either a
that?
Guesser or you're an asker.
Oh, really? Tell me about it.
I wish people could see your face right there. Like, oh, really? Tell me about it. Hey, I got to bring something interesting to the table.
No, I'm serious. Mm-hmm. I'm serious. I don't know.
It's
I'm curious.
You're either a guesser or an asker. I am very much a guesser, and I am trying not to be so much. Ask culture, you're brought up that you should always ask the question, but know that the answer could be no. That's a possibility.
Oh.
Guess culture, you... Yeah. Passive aggressive. You are learning the fine. You're like feeling out clues, and you don't ask unless you're pretty sure The answer is yes. So, like, my husband's an asker. I'm a guesser.
Uh-huh.
And I'm working towards not being so much that way.
So a guesser, is that the same as, is this like a codependent thing?
I am like kind a passive like aggressive.
A, kind of door, like a doormat-y kind of.
No. I wanted to swear, but I was like, that's not nice.
You can swear.
No, you're not a doormat. It's like you're navigating and you're figuring things out. And you're picking up subtle clues.
I know, but you're speculating and you're not taking a lot of chances.
Right. Until you know. Like, you'll take the chance eventually.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
Right, maybe.
Maybe.
But as a guesser, don't you always assume that the answer is no and that, you know, you're not going to be good enough or that you probably shouldn't even bother with it?
Well, I mean, there's some of that. I mean, I'm thinking that right now. Jesus. But, yeah, you're like, and you're trying to figure it out in, like, that passive-aggressive way. And
So if you're passive-aggressive, you're pretty good at that?
Oh, I yes, I've gotten better, but
better at it or better not
better
doing
at
it?
Not doing it, and I can tap into it when I need to. Like, especially you throw in that Fargo. You can just like, you know, like, oh, that's neat how you have the walls. Like, like they can just not. Oh, you can just move them. Okay, so you could put them away and clean it up if you wanted to. Well, isn't that nice?
I remember it working with you. Just because, like, you know, nothing's great, is it?
Well, you don't want to. You don't want to.
Like, I get off stage, you know, I'd be like, huh? And you'd be like, it's okay.
I don't know. Come on. I'm sure. Well, here's the real truth. Especially that last run of the theaters, I was probably stuffing my face backstage with treats that
people
bring for you. So I was probably like, uh-huh, yeah, it's great. And I meant the cake or something.
Yeah. But right.
Yeah, you don't want anything. You don't want to get too excited about anything. You don't want to enjoy anything too much. Just.
And you're aware of this, but like by the time you were aware of it, though, well, it was already who you were.
Like, I think it is. It's deep. Like, I catch myself, and I'm such a rule follower, and like.
Yeah.
I want to break out of it, but I can't. Like. Gotta wait for that walk sign. Cannot cross.
This is problematic.
Yeah. Especially in
But you grow up with hippies.
Well,
were they like that?
I think so. My mom, I think, is definitely guess culture.
Uh-huh.
And maybe my dad is a little of both. I don't know. Because I think I can communicate. I think I can dabble in both languages.
Hmm. But now. It's just like, you know, in the house, it was like, see, like, I can't, if I even fucking think that someone's being passive aggressive with me.
But how are we friends?
No, I mean, because like, I know you and you're funny and you're a comic and, you know, I can break through that shit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, no, but like people who, like, I always assume they're fucking with me anyways. Right. I'm already sensitive.
Right.
So when I get diminished at all. Like, because I think my mom was a little like that. Everything was, it was always sort of like, why did you get a B?
Right.
That kind of shit. Like, it's like you're never quite good enough.
Yeah.
And I fucking just.
I grew a little bit like that too, but I didn't feel quite as judgy, but you were like, nothing's ever great. I feel like that was a little bit of my upbringing too. Like, grades came easily to me and I did well in school.
Well, that's good.
And things, but it was never, and they're very proud of me. I don't want to throw my parents under the bus.
Right.
And I love them and they're great. But yeah, it's never, like, I just had a, you know, the album coming out. My mom's like, oh, you were in the newspaper. How come? I was like,
well. Read it.
Yeah.
Read the article.
Yeah. She's like, oh, for the, oh, that's great. Oh, that's, well, good. We're proud of you. I'm like, well.
How come?
You know what I mean? Like, that kind of.
It's the worst.
It's always. I mean, I don't know what. But if they did say, like, that was such a good show, or, man, we're so proud of you for, like, even doing the littlest thing, I'd be like, that doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah. Oh, really?
You know, I think like, no one could win.
I guess that's true. But, like, you know, when it's like growing up and your parents are like, how does somebody get on that other show that you weren't, you know, like, how do you. Maybe you should talk to Bill Maher or somebody, or you might my daddy say, talk, he seems to know
at
what
least
he's doing.
They like they are
in the world.
They want you to achieve something in this industry. My parents are a little bit like, so do you think you'll stay in Los Angeles, or are you guys? What about you? Don't think you could do that in Minneapolis? I'm like, how many commercials? How many things?
Why do they want you to come back?
Just to be closer.
Oh.
They love me. I'm a treasure.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like the idea of living near my parents or. Having them, I don't know. Usually it has to do with kids. Then see, like, then they'll start bullying you into kids.
Well, I'm old. We're at the age now where people just are like, oh, did you, like, are you guys going to adopt? Like, they, you know, like, we've missed that.
Have you?
I think so.
How old are you?
I'm 40.
You could probably get one out.
Yeah. I mean, it's Hollywood, so sure. Rich white women have babies in their mid-40s, but I've got two of those.
You don't think?
No? I mean, I love kids, but I don't... It hasn't happened. It's, you know.
Have you just been waiting for... Are you guessing?
I'm just feeling everything out.
You know how it's supposed to happen, not necessarily stopping it.
As a comic Tim Harmson says, like, we're not trying. Like, I mean, I'm home alone with my husband trapped in quarantine, so things are happening.
Right.
But...
It just never happened?
It hasn't happened, and I'm not like...
Not freaking out?
Not freaking out.
Is he?
No. Oh. If he is, he isn't. But he would tell me.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems to be one of those things that people discuss when you do the marriage thing.
Right.
Do you want children?
Right.
Did you do that?
We did. And we were like, they're great and we love them. But if it doesn't happen, I think what we have is also great.
I'm that way as well. I mean, I didn't want them.
Yeah. But you didn't not want them?
No, I not wanted them. And, you know, just, but not because of any... I don't have anything against him, but I just was, it just caused me anxiety to just think about having them. You know, like I'm too anxious and too selfish and too emotionally volatile.
Those are all, that's very good reasoning.
To be a good parent.
But I bet you're a fun uncle sometimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I think I can fundamentally take care of people, but I just don't trust myself emotionally and also with like the, I'm childish emotionally.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be that parent. That's like, you know, why is the fucking kid not talking to me? Because he's four. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
It's bullshit.
And that's just four teenagers. Oof.
But now I find myself, like on Instagram stories, a couple of my friends have kids. Mm-hmm. And like I watch the kids and I'm like, that seems like they're engaged in exciting life.
Well, and like the further it slips away, the more I'm like, oh, shoot. I think my body, I'm supposed, and just like this whole, you know, everything on the planet says that this physical being I am in is supposed to be able to create life.
Yeah. Doesn't Ryan do a bit about that?
Maybe.
About the moment that guy's about to, you know, come and, you know, and you know, you shouldn't, but the entire history of the species is behind you.
And it's like, wait, I haven't? Like, what's wrong with my body that I haven't? Not that I was like...
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I'd been more active as a youth, but...
You weren't?
No. Again, follow the rules. You can't... No, I would...
Oh, because of the Catholic thing.
Guilt, man.
Ooh. You grew up thinking there was a hell?
Oh, yeah. And then that was wrong.
How's hell holding up for you?
It's like a different place to go, I guess. some place is leaving the house.
Not as scary
Not
anymore?
As scary, yeah.
Do you still believe in it?
I don't think so. I'll wait till my grandparents, all of them are dead before I can start.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got three out of my four grandparents.
That's amazing. What are they, like 90?
Yeah, 93, 95. I'm very lucky. I actually, right before lockdown, was in, did a big show at the Fargo Theater, and then was in Chicago, and then was supposed to do Grand Rapids, Laugh Fest. It was another place. It was first time I did a live WTF. I didn't know what I was doing. It was not funny at all. But, you know, I was there.
And who else was on that one?
That one was a great... Tommy Jonigan, Kevin Nealon.
Oh, yeah.
And then Moshe Kasher, like, came up from the audience and told the story.
Oh,
and
right.
I was like, what is happening? I didn't know. So then I did the live at PodFest right when I first moved here. And I was, like, newly single. And I was crazy. And I was the last guest.
So this is the third one?
This is the third one. I'm pretty big time. My biggest credits prior to this are being a guest on this show.
Oh, that was the one, the all-women show.
All-women, yeah. It was me and Whitney and Pamela.
That was good.
Yeah, it was great. And I got like...
You killed it.
Yeah, I was crazy. I was a crazy person.
I remember now.
Yeah, it was real
hyper. I was
hyper.
Like, oh, she's so much better now. She's finally cut loose.
I was out of control. There was a brother of one of the new kids in the block in the audience, and he talked to me after the show. I mean, you've made things happen for me, Mark. Yes.
Which one?
Joey McIntyre's brother, Tommy or Timmy. I don't remember.
What the fuck was he doing there?
He was there because Joey McIntyre is friends with Graham Elwood. I know way too much, and it is a
Graham
gift.
Graham Elwood from Canada?
Gift that I have to bring new kids on the block into every conversation. You haven't had any of them on the show, have you?
I haven't had any of them.
I mean, I don't know that.
I work with Marky Mark, though.
Well, there you go.
Isn't he one of them?
Yeah, he's a brother. He's not.
His brother's in the new kid.
Donnie Wahlberg. His brother's married to Jenny McCarthy. Oh, have you had Jenny on the show?
No.
Yeah, no. Oh.
I don't know what I'd do with Jenny. Talk about vaccines and Donnie. All right. So here you are, corporate culture, administrative assistant.
Right. And then I prefer executive assistant. All right, fine. Sounds fancier.
Were you losing your fucking mind?
A little bit, yeah.
How'd you do, what'd you do comedy on, a dare? What happened?
I think I told someone.
Yeah.
And then I set the date, and then people were going to show up. And I didn't know how it worked at Acme. It was where I signed up. I didn't realize Acme. That, like, you didn't just get up.
Mm.
You know, I didn't realize a bajillion people sign up.
Is that how it works there?
Yeah. So like the store or anywhere else, like a bunch of people go and sign up on a list. And then an hour later, they put the list out. And so I said I was going to do it on whatever, December 6th.
Yeah.
And then the week before, I was like, oh, shit. I've invited people. Again, not realizing, like, don't invite people.
Your first time?
To your first fucking time.
To your first 5 years?
Although the first time it probably was because you're so high and they're just so impressed that you did it. But
did you practice on people?
No, but I mean, with the acting, I knew, and I would go see comedy and would go to
you
the
did?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was something that was in your repertoire, live comedy?
Yeah, yeah, a little bit when I was an adult. I didn't listen as a kid. Like, there's some comics who are like, when I was five, I was listening to
right.
albums. And
no, but when you were working at the executive assistant, you guys
would go
sometimes
to Acme.
Be like, let's go see a comedy show.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we knew of Swartzen because his half hour had just come out and he's from Minnesota. We knew Bamford way back then, too, because she was just, like, the coolest already.
Yeah. Was she from up there, too?
Yeah, she's from Duluth.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know where she started stand-up, if she started. And we all knew Hedberg.
Sure.
So,
because he was from there. Mm-hmm. He came from two places.
Yeah, I think Seattle also.
Right. But his family was mm-hmm. from there,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Minneapolis? Or
I think
somewhere?
Minneapolis or like a suburb.
Right.
Yeah.
So you knew him
yeah.
briefly when his headshots just said Mitch?
Right. And he's like touring with Chad Daniels and Darlene Wescor and like doing small
Chad
towns.
Chad Daniels, another
yeah.
one.
Mm-hmm.
Great comic.
Yeah, he is like, I just worked with him in the summer in Sacramento and then here in LA, he had me open for him at the Improv.
Uh-huh.
And his fans are everywhere, and it sold out months before
really?
The show at the
Where?
Improv.
At the Improv
yeah.
here? Uh-huh.
I was going to tell you, when we did the tour for the last special, yeah. not the most recent special of yours on Netflix.
Too Real.
That you filmed in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I was so sick that whole tour and trying, when we drove from Madison to Minneapolis,
yeah.
I was trying not to cough. Like, I think I had a sinus infection.
Oh, yeah.
I was something off, and you were like, I'd be like, nope, I'm great. I'm not sick at all, sir.
I remember feeling bad.
So bad. And but it's all turned out because I didn't want you to get sick.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. And you went and got a coronavirus test before this
right.
show.
Yeah, because my husband was like, you cannot go. You can't go to Mark Maron's house. You yeah. can't get, you can't infect an icon, a comedy icon. I'm like, well, geez, like, I haven't left the house in a month. What is wrong?
Does it feel weird? Am I like the first person you talk to in person?
Yeah, without that's not my. Well, we have a real Jesus neighbor. We live in a duplex. Real Jesus neighbor on one side in construction. I cannot stress to you how close and how much construction is happening next to my head in the morning. Like our bedroom window. Like I could open the window and
that's
shake the hands.
Fucking worse, man.
So it's like I can't even like, let me just go sit outside and read a book. It's because it's either Jesus telling me how this is end times and like we all got to turn like this is in the book, Mark. You just
know,
ask my neighbor. Ask my neighbor.
I know it's in the book. So all right. Well, how does that like? How often do you see her?
Well, anytime we open the door, she'll open the door. Like our doors are like it's like an L, so our door you know what I mean? Like gosh, so and she's fine. But
like she's really into.
She's a Jew for Jesus.
Oh wow! So that's extreme.
And
they double down.
Yeah, yeah.
On the Jesus,
everything comes back to. And she's like she'll ask you a question, but doesn't really want you to answer because she wants to.
Right.
Tell you about Jesus.
The good news.
Yeah, yeah. And this is all prophesized, and pretty soon they're going to be putting chips on us and.
Oh, it's the 666 chips.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. So, the Illuminati, Mark of the Beast.
Yeah, and I'm like, I just want to get my newspaper, maybe read this book, because now otherwise it's construction on the other side.
Construction. I had to deal with that for a year. They built a bank. They put a foundation.
Here, with the
Not
other
here,
house?
No, in Boston when I was younger, when I was just starting out in comedy, like staying up late.
Yeah.
And they were putting a foundation.
Oh, just jackhammer.
Dropping a giant thing from a crane onto steel girders like they were nails. They were putting nails into the earth. Giant nails into
nails
the earth.
Into the earth.
With a dropping fucking rock.
What time do they start?
Like 7?
Yeah, you can, because now in LA, you can start at 7 a.m. weekdays, 8 a.m., and sometimes at 6:45.
And the
truck's
type,
rolling up.
The type of futile anger you experience. Where you like, you know, there's nothing you can do. It's a good life lesson.
And I hate confrontation so much.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. But they're, you know, we are paying rent and they're leaning a lot of the like wood and stuff on our, like by our bedroom window and our back. And my husband is like, he's talked to him several times and he's
about leaning.
Yeah. And talked to the landlord and he's pretty fired up. But I'm like, these workers, they don't give a shit. Like they're just.
What are they building?
They're remodeling. Like, there's three houses on a duplex, a little bungalow, and then a big house, and they're remodeling the little bungalow that I think they've planned to just like, oh, we'll just replace a couple of things. And then it was like they pulled the thread and we're like, oh, we need to totally redo this.
Oh, so now it's going to be forever.
Yeah, and they're redoing our driveway together. I don't know today.
Wow. Oh, a driveway? Really?
I guess. Yes, I don't know.
So it's the same units, it's the same owners as your point. I get it.
But it's like the one time in history where for a month,
I can
sleep in.
Yeah,
I'm really good at doing nothing. I could sleep
Me
in.
Me too.
I love to stay up late and sleep in, but we can't.
I'm fucked.
Yeah.
All right, so.
Yeah.
You're going to comedy shows, executive assistant. You've seen Bamford, you've seen Schwartzen.
Yeah.
You've seen Chad Daniels.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And I thought I'd try it. And I said, I'm going to try it at least 3 times, no matter what happens.
At Acme.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't realize. Like, I got up 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And then.
Lewis.
Yep. I don't know who is actually running the Monday. He doesn't pick the Monday night list. I think maybe he'll say like, ooh, once you get to a certain point, he'll be like, I remember the first time I got 5 minutes instead of 3.
Do you remember seeing Hedberg?
No.
Oh, you never saw him?
Mm-mm, no. He by the time I started, he was already like, I remember like, I just started and he's on Letterman again. So I started, I got up 2 weeks in a row and people were like, holy shit, and I was like, oh, you don't just get up every week? Okay. And then I went to some other, the third time was at some little rinky dink bar show.
Did you write jokes?
I did, yeah. I did. I had 3. I was like, I knew because I'd gone enough to see like people who looked like they were just winging it.
Yeah.
And I knew from my stage training that
they weren't.
Or they just couldn't do it. They were like, oh shoot, what?
Oh,
else?
You mean at open mic?
Right.
Yeah. But you knew that everybody you saw professionally was writing.
Writing, or if they were winging it, it was like they were winging it with an idea.
Yeah.
So I did prepare. And then just started, and then I liked it, and it was like, oh, this whole new world, and oh, it's fun, and you're out at bars, and it's like a million guys, just, and you're the pretty princess for a week, and you're like, oh, fuck this.
But you didn't, but still.
I kept my day. That was one thing I remember Tracy Ashley saying, keep your day job as long as you can.
Right.
Which was also good, and it's an interesting, starting in Minneapolis, you can make a few bucks.
Yeah.
Like if you have 15 minutes, that's cleanish.
Yeah.
There were, at least when I started, a handful of
one-nighters
bookers who were like, I'm doing this, you know, deer hunting widowers weekend. Ooh, a lady comic who's kind of clean. Heck yeah. Come and do this VFW show where there's a 90-year-old and a 19-year-old in the audience.
Right.
We need, you know, so you learned like, okay, well.
So you do special event gigs in the area.
Yeah,
you
got weird, like VFW. Yeah. There's, you can drive, you know, like an hour around Minneapolis.
Was there a community there?
Yeah.
Guys and women that never left?
I would work a lot for Bill Bauer, who's has passed away, but.
He was a stand-up?
Stand-up. And I think maybe he was like of the Louis Anderson.
Oh, that generation?
That generation.
But never left the region?
I think he was out in LA and then started a family, maybe wrote for some things out here and then went back. But like, sold out everything, you know, would do all the talent, did the circuit in the Midwest and would sell out all the shows. And those are always great, super fun gigs. You always got a prime rib dinner, you know.
Right.
And there's another lady, Rox Tarrant, a woman that I would always put on these shows.
Yeah. I always love hearing about those people, the unsung heroes.
Yeah.
Regional acts.
Yeah.
That just keep going.
Yeah, or there's like C. Willie Miles, another comic that would perform at Acme sometimes, but just does like, I think he does a ton of cruises and like corporates.
Cause
once I started doing it, friends, parents would be like, oh, we saw the funniest at our Coldwell Banker annual meeting. Do you know this guy? And I was like, I've never heard of this guy. And then he like rolls up in this fancy car and you're like, oh shit, that's a whole nother circuit of comedy I know nothing about.
Have you done that?
I've done a few corporates, but...
Yeah?
I didn't quit my day job, that office job, until I've lived in L.A. almost 6 years. So maybe like 7, 8 years ago. I kept it a long time. And then I kind of went down to part-time. I would leave early, drive 4 hours, tell jokes, and then come back. Yeah.
So you stayed practical.
I stayed.
You could not just let it all go.
I'm not going to take that leap. I'm not going to cross on the no, don't cross. I'm not. It was scary to take a leap.
Well, you got
to
take a leap.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is that going to happen?
Well, I'm here. I'm in L.A. Here we are. Here we are in quarantine. Had some really, really great auditions right before lockdown. One of the last auditions I went on, the guy was like, that was great, I'd shake your hand, but, you know, and I was like,
really?
Great.
But wait, okay, so you get here.
Yeah.
And, like, I think I had part of that. I think I talked you up in Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah,
like, I'm
I use it in, like, a little one sheet about myself. I'm like, here's what Mark Maron said about me 20 years ago. Oh, you want to find the article online? You can't. It's no longer on the thing, but he did say it.
Yeah, because I guess it didn't. Maybe it's, I have, I'm playing the long game. For you.
Waiting for my time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do wish, like, I think also starting in the Midwest, you have this, like, the carrot you're chasing is, okay, I'm going to host. Instead of, you do these guest spots. Okay, and then now I'm going to host. Okay, now I want a feature. Mm. Okay, now I want to headline this tiny room in Sioux Falls. Okay, which is great and it's a good skill to have.
Right.
To not be afraid of an audience of 12 people, two of whom are 90,
yeah.
one of whom is 21.
Yeah.
Or whatever, and there's a hockey game on the TV behind you, you know.
Yeah, but, I know those kind of
things, yeah. So you're chasing that and your headline, and then all of a sudden I feel like, when are you like, oh, shoot, is this the...
the life?
Oops. Damn it. Because then you get to LA and you're like, dang, all these people who've lived here 5 years before me, the connection, the friends that they have...
I know, but does it matter? I have no sense of it, man. I mean, does it matter? Like, I got here and I was like, yeah, I got here from New York. And I had some reputation, but I didn't
I feel like you always had a reputation.
Well, not a good one.
Right. Well, yeah, I didn't say that. Oh. But, I
mean, but like when I got here in 2000 and whatever, I mean, I could do comedy, but it was like, where can I do it? How do I do it? Yeah. What, you know, who do
and
I got?
Nobody gives a shit if you have, you can move here as a headliner.
Nobody gives a shit about nothing.
Yeah, they don't care.
Doesn't matter.
They don't care. You have 45 minutes out. Nobody cares.
You got to get into the rooms.
You got to get, or on the cool show.
Yeah.
You get it. And then that worked out. The one thing about Minneapolis, once you realize, like, oh man, my goal is not to headline whatever small town every other weekend. Or like, I need to get somewhere where I can get a TV credit so then at least I can draw some people, whatever. In Minneapolis, sometimes people like you come through, or like, I did Doug Loves Movies a couple of times. So then that's where I met Jonah. So then, like, it'd be like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. And he's like, oh, well, why don't you come and do my show? Oh, what's your show? Oh, Meltdown. Yeah, I think I can squeeze that in on my trip.
And you did it, right?
Yeah, I did that a few times. And
did you do the TV version?
I didn't do the TV version. Hmm. I have no TV outside of maybe seeing me in a commercial for insurance or something. But
how many commercials did you?
I've done 3 or 4 here in LA.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
That's good.
Yeah.
Did they make some money?
I'm non-union, so I mean, for the day that I show up, yes, but for the, you know, 10 auditions before that.
But you come out here and you've got a few friends, and you're, you know, doing the little rooms here and there, but it's hard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you get the job over at the restaurant.
Right.
And there you are.
Yeah.
But you don't have a problem with that.
No, I mean, I'm like super part-time at a restaurant.
It's a groovy place.
Yeah. And it's good because then I saw you, because I think like you wouldn't have had me on the podcast festival when I first moved here if I hadn't seen you in the restaurant. You know, like,
well,
outside,
I didn't know where you were, you know, and like I always wonder about people when they, you know, when they are at jobs where they're visible to other comics. Like, am I embarrassing her now? I saw Sebastian Maniscalco when he was a fucking waiter at like the Four Seasons or whatever. And it was just that moment where I'm there for a meeting and he's the waiter. I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
And now he's the biggest act in the fucking world.
Yeah, you never know. And it feels weird to be like, oh, I got this album, but I also work in a restaurant and I'm a failure. But they're good people and it's great. And like, I've met good people.
I don't know if it's a failure thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, what's the other option? Yeah, sucking it up and not doing nothing and just smoking weed all day?
Yeah. Nope, because I would be breaking rules. I don't do that. But I drink plenty of coffee. But yeah, it keeps you sane, makes you leave the house. And I'd like to live a comfortable, like, I like being able to pay rent.
You don't want to worry about shit. Yeah. But here's my question, though. So, because I remember I wasn't concerned, But, you know, I don't, after a certain point, I don't know how to help anybody. Yeah. But like you met this dude.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
I talk about my husband?
Yeah.
I met him online. I swiped right.
Really?
Yeah. I was looking for adult physical fun in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is huge, and I didn't want to date customers of the restaurant, and I didn't want to date a comic.
But it was specific physical fun?
Yeah, I was looking to have sex.
Yeah.
I will say that. So embarrassing. Yeah. I'm an adult. I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah.
So I swipe right, and was like, okay, this is you can mail order. You can swipe.
Get this guy.
First action. And I was like, oh, he's fun. He's got cool gray hair. And and he lives like on my side of town.
Yeah.
And
so everything's going your way.
And then I was like, well, I guess I'll keep him around forever.
So you met him.
Yeah.
And so you had the sex. And that was fine. But you like the guy.
Yes.
And he's like a train guy?
He works for Amtrak. He works on the trains.
What does he do on the trains? Is he the guy that walks up and down?
He's not the thing? No, that's the conductor does that, I think. He's like a train attendant. He's like a flight attendant, but on the trains.
Oh, and then so sometimes he works in the first class Amtraks?
Yeah, some of that. And then sometimes he works in the yard, like doing stuff to the trains. I don't really know.
Do you like trains?
He does, and I think he likes, like, he'll work like 3 days and then have like 6 days off, you know, like, so it's like that kind of hours.
You getting health insurance through Amtrak?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I had it at the restaurant, but now I have better with
the. Oh, the restaurant?
Yeah.
That's nice. That's
pretty. And 401k. They take care of their people.
At the fucking restaurant?
Yes.
That's Isn't pretty that great? Good, man.
So yeah, he works for Amtrak, and so that's another thing. He's gone he's usually gone 3 days.
Where did you go?
His route, before the lockdown, his route was up and down the coast, like up San Luis Obispo, San Diego, just back and forth.
Yeah.
And he'd spend the night like in Goleta or wherever, and then home for like 4 days. So I'd have a few days just alone, do what I want, relax. Or like when he's gone, okay, then those are nights you definitely got to go out and hit a mic or go see a show or do whatever. But now we're just both home.
I thought you said he was working a little.
Well, he is, but there are way fewer
trains
right now. So the last trip, he went up to Seattle and back, which he doesn't normally do, the long hauls.
Along the coast or in the middle?
Yeah, along the coast. Nice. And then sometimes he goes up to Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a long haul.
Yeah, that's, was that 6 days? That might be, Chicago or New Orleans, one of them is 6 days from LA.
So
here we are.
What are the big goals now?
Yeah.
You've done 4 commercials.
One of which I'm in a bathing suit, and so that means I'm a hero.
Yeah.
As a real woman.
And you've got this record out.
Yep.
That's solid.
Yeah. And yeah. People are digging it. It's I guess it's playing on Sirius on a few different channels.
Thank God.
But yeah.
That make you some money.
Yeah, hopefully. I keep opening the Sirius app and like waiting to hear myself and go, you know, set my like the Pandora, which is such a strange to pull up and see where people are listening.
Oh, you do? You can?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
I don't quite know how to read it all.
Uh-huh.
But
where are they listening?
Like a lot in the Midwest and then up and down the coast and then like a handful of places in Florida.
Mm. But you're like you're a Midwest person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of the your point of view.
Right.
Yeah.
Part of the appeal.
Part of the appeal.
Yeah, so I'm here. I love stand-up. Boy, do I miss it, which I didn't realize.
That's weird because I'm having the opposite experience.
You're not missing
I'm like,
it.
I think I'm done.
Yeah. Well, stand-up. Yeah. I mean, what? You're a fancy pants actor. Are you like, are you missing that?
No,
are you missing being on set?
I'm not missing anything. I'm like, I've been waiting my whole life to do nothing with confidence.
Well,
I mean, I've done nothing with nothing.
With nothing.
I like doing nothing with something.
It's safe to say you've earned it. You can enjoy this.
There's always part of my brain, you know, outside of the plague and worrying about, you know, the end of the world. But no, it's teaching me that like there was part of me that I don't know if I'm old school or what, but there's part of me that always thought like, when do you retire? Isn't the idea of work to stop?
Yeah, eventually? But do you think you, Marc Maron, will actually retire?
I don't think so. I don't know. You know, everyone always asks me that, but like I don't know. This is a real lesson in that.
Yeah.
This forced pause is really one of those things where it's like if you really think, you know, assess yourself. Yeah. Like, how am I really feeling about doing nothing? Well, it's great because I know no one else is doing anything,
right.
So that helps.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like the competition's
well,
over.
Well, maybe at your level, so the level I'm at, I'm having a little bit of the opposite. Like, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing everything.
Yeah.
The agent is like, fill out, do make sure this is up to date. And like, these casting directors are taking these submissions. And if you're not reaching out for a new manager, now is the time. And did it. And I'm like, I'm
right now.
Fuck, I'm behind. Yeah. Because they have nothing to do but sift through submissions. I'm like, yeah, but if thousands of people are submitting.
That's still another version of nothing to do.
Yeah. So
doesn't mean anything.
But
they're
I think
trying to justify their jobs.
It's are you feeling any creative
sure,
impulse? I mean, what are you writing? I see you cooking, you're podcasting.
Oh yeah, no, I
stuff.
Cook, I play guitar, and you know, I talk on the mics. Sometimes I'll go on IG live and you know, and I'm writing a few things down here and there, but mostly just letting my head clear out.
Yeah.
And working on the house a bit. But
do you miss acting? Are you loving the acting?
It's okay. I mean, like, look, man, it's nice to be part of a thing.
Yeah.
But
part of a thing. You're part of some amazing, like, huge cultural things.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's you know, it is fun and it's exciting, but it's work.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah, everything's okay, but like, I don't think I would have ever taken a break.
Yeah.
Certainly not like this.
Yeah.
And I am surprised at how well I'm acclimating. Because as a comic, and I've said this before, like, we did nothing for a long time. Yeah. Not you, but many of us.
Well, I've done nothing. I'm good at doing nothing, but yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
All right, so the record's out.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll get back to work eventually. Yeah. Do you cook?
Ugh, no, I hate it so much.
So what are you guys doing over
there? I mean, we're cooking. We have to. Like, luckily we signed up for a CSA right before this all went down.
What's that?
The community sustained, supported agriculture.
You get
like,
the box?
We get a box of produce every week.
It's still coming?
Yeah. Huh. And then now you can also like add on like eggs and milk and stuff. So we haven't really, I have to go out and get coffee after this, but we haven't really like.
I have coffee.
This. Sweet.
What you mean beans?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gave you some beans.
That's the only reason I'm here.
Deal. Let's go take care of it.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. This is great to talk to another human being. Leave my house. I got to pet a cat. This has been.
Great.
I took a shower. I put on makeup. This is.
You look great.
This has been like prom. This has been the highlight of my quarantine.
Well, wait till I give you your corsage. All right, talk to you later.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That was me and Amber Preston. Her new stand-up album is called Sparkly Parts. Get it wherever you get music and comedy records. It will bring you back to the Midwest. All right, let's play some guitar.
Boomer lives.